This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have not had any offers from the government. The union position is very simple. We just want compliance with what is the legal position. That is, the registered collective bargaining agreement must be adhered to.
That was Dr. Kahura Mudia, Secretary General for the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentist Union, speaking about the union's demands for ending its strike. Details coming up. Also, aid agencies warn Sudan faces a humanitarian catastrophe, and aid groups call for an end to arms sales to Israel and to Palestinian armed groups. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. United Nations and international aid agencies warn the lives of millions of people in Sudan are at risk as the world turns a blind eye to the enormous humanitarian needs facing this war-torn country. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Sudan has endured a year of war, which humanitarian agencies agree is one of the world's worst man-made disasters. The World Health Organization says the war has had a staggering human cost, with more than 15,000 deaths and an estimated 33,000 injured. The WHO reports about 6.6 million people are displaced inside Sudan and 1.8 million have fled to neighboring countries, making Sudan the largest displacement crisis in the world. The agency warns Sudan also could soon become one of the world's worst hunger crises. Nearly 18 million people are suffering from acute hunger, and 5 million more are on the brink of famine. And yet, WHO spokesperson Christian Lindemeyer says this is only the tip of the iceberg of an increasingly desperate situation.
Time is running out. Without a stop to the fighting and unhindered access for the delivery of humanitarian aid, Sudan's crisis will dramatically worsen in the months to come and could impact the whole region. Access for humanitarian actors is particularly constrained, as has been reported so many times by all of the colleagues. Half of the states are not accessible from within Sudan.
He says Darfur and Kordofan are inaccessible and cut off from humanitarian aid. Sudan's National Army and the rival Rapid Support Forces militia began fighting on April 15, 2023, each seeking to control the government. The two sides have made it difficult for aid groups and relief supplies to reach civilians. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says the conflict has shattered the basic fabric of everyday life across Sudan. Speaking from Mombasa, Kenya, IFRC head of delegation Farid Abdulkadir says the country's health system has collapsed and cannot care for the population. He says health facilities lack supplies, equipment, and medical staff, many of whom have been forced to flee their homes.
The humanitarian consequences of the war is dire. It has affected the infrastructure in terms of water supply, in terms of electricity, but worst of all, the people engagement in livelihood and food production, which has both impact now and impact in the future.
The UN Development Programme has just released a comprehensive survey of thousands of rural households across Sudan. The study finds the country faces an accelerating food security crisis. The study also warns a famine in Sudan is expected this year, particularly in the states of Khartoum, Al Jazeera, and in the Darfur and Kordofan regions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenyan doctors continue their strike calling for better pay and working conditions. The doctors are demanding a commitment from the government to fulfill collective bargaining agreements signed in 2017, but President William Ruto says the country has no money to do so. Dr. Kahura Mudia is Secretary General for the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union. He tells me that the government is playing hardball.
So the strike is now entering the 30th day. Tomorrow will be the 31st day. We have not had any offers from the government. The UN position is very simple. We just want compliance with what is the legal position, that is, the registered collective bargaining agreement must be adhered to. And that's what we're calling upon the government to settle. The other things that have come up in the last several years is that we have specialist doctors, doctors who are in training, postgraduate resident doctors, who've been working for free for all the time and the number of years that are in service. And these persons need to be compensated for the work that they do. So that is one of the new demands that is brought to the government that they need to comply with. The other one is the aspect of failure to provide comprehensive health insurance to these persons who are providing these services. So doctors, a majority number of them, are exposed to health risks because they don't have a working comprehensive health insurance. So that's why we're reminding the government to provide this to the doctors. So it's quite sad that the only thing that is happening at the moment is just threats and intimidations and threats to replace us because we are demanding too much and we are like spoiled workers and we are not really responsible in whatever that we do. So the only thing that we're telling the government is that we provide a very crucial service in the country. We are ready to see our patients. We are ready to go to work any day that they settle our matters because the hardships that we endure at the workplace, we know them very well, but they have failed to listen to us.
Dr. Mudia, do you believe President William Ruto, when he is asking the doctors to call off the strike and go back to work, saying the government is struggling with a huge wage bill and cannot afford to review their salaries?
Money is being lost without being accounted for. The right, the rate of corruption is too high. And for the government to tell us through the president that doctors must live within their means, that's really insensible because doctors, the only thing that they know is to serve and become and be good civil servants. So that aspect of lack of prioritization, it's not truthful. The position is that the wastage that is currently happening should be minimized so that we can have enough resources to meet the doctors' demands, and which demands are very legal and which have not changed over the last 7 years. The government has a role to provide health care in the public sector for all Kenyans. So the government is abdicating its duty, which is not really right, because not many Kenyans can afford private health care. We want private health care. We want public health care for everyone, because they can afford that easily. But because our leaders, they have private insurance, they are comfortable accessing private care. And because of that, they don't feel the pinch that majority of Kenyans and doctors experience whenever they go to the public facility. So we want that system strengthened. So that's our main core issue.
And lastly, doctor, are deaths occurring across Kenya in the hospitals because there actually are no doctors right now? They are on strike.
Yes, right now, the issues are quite serious. The only places that could be working are probably the ICUs, but most of the doctors have stood down their work because we want these matters settled as soon as possible. But we thought the government was serious with Kenyans' lives, but it's taken us 30 days. We are still not yet in the talks. We've not even reached a point whereby we can even sign any settlement. So the government is playing hardball. They're saying they will not meet us because we have to go back to work for them to engage us. So it becomes absurd because last year we did exactly that. We went to work and let the government settle. We entered into another agreement for them to settle all those things within 60 days. They never did. Now they're telling us again, go back to work and then come and settle again. So this aspect of them telling us, go back to work, we'll sit and talk, it's not working anymore.
Dr. Kaura Mudia, Secretary General for the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentist Union. He talked to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Police in Ethiopia have arrested 13 suspects in the killing of an opposition leader from the restive state of Oromia. The body of Bate Orgesa of the Oromo Liberation Front, or OLF, was found dumped on a road outside the town of Maki on Wednesday, shortly after he had been arrested by suspected government forces, according to the French news agency AFP. The United States, the European Union, and Britain have joined rights activists in calling for a full investigation into the killing of Bate, an outspoken politician who had spent several years in and out of detention. The Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, an independent state-affiliated body, urged both the regional and central governments to conduct a prompt, impartial, and full investigation into Bate's killing. The largest and most populous region of Ethiopia, Oromia, has been in the grip of an armed insurrection since 2018. The OLF renounced armed struggle that year after Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed himself, an ethnic Oromo, came to power, prompting the Oromo Liberation Army to split from the party. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America, and for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. More than 250 humanitarian and human rights groups are calling on all United Nations member states to immediately halt arms transfers to Israel and Palestinian armed groups. The Norwegian Refugee Council, which is among those groups, says the call is aimed at averting further loss of civilian life. Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the NRC, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that Israel's bombardment and siege of Gaza is depriving the civilian population of the basics to survive.
Well, we are a very wide and growing coalition of organizations that have witnessed what's happening in Gaza and from Gaza in recent months. And some of us in the beginning of the year said, you cannot have more arms to what is the largest loss of children's lives, civilian lives in general, aid workers' lives, teachers, nurses, doctors. In general, the hemorrhage of human innocent life is bigger in Gaza and on the 7th of October in Israel than in any other modern conflict. So it would be insane to fuel this fire with more arms.
Did things change? Was there kind of a turning point when there was that attack, whether it was on purpose or not, with the World Kitchen aid workers?
That has given us, of course, an enormous international attention. But for these groups now, 250 and growing groups, so it's really a wide global coalition of humanitarian organizations and human rights groups. What really triggered this united appeal to stop sending arms to this war was the killing of children, of civilians, really, across Gaza. But of course, it's not only stop sending arms to the Israeli war machine that is pummeling all infrastructure, all homes, all over Gaza. It's also to those who have given arms to these militant groups that exerted terror on the 7th of October and killed hundreds and hundreds of Israeli defenseless civilians.
What are your staffers telling you? We're hearing reports the last few days things have changed in Gaza. Israeli forces are leaving. There's not as many bombings. The food trucks, the supplies are getting in. What can you tell us?
Well, we hope there will be a shift to the better now. There is a few more trucks coming in with aid in the south over Kerem Shalom, but it's fewer than Israel claims there is, because it is really what is received and can be sent on inside Gaza to Palestinians that counts. They have not opened the port, Ashdod, as they promised President Biden. They have not opened the Erez border crossing, as they promised President Biden. And it's still very hard to move inside Gaza, and especially to the north, where people are in famine. The withdrawal of forces could be a good sign. It could even be a regrouping before they assault the largest refugee camp on earth, which is Rafah, as Prime Minister Netanyahu threatens to do.
Describe what you mean and what it means to declare famine in an area. And how can this happen in a place like Gaza, where it's more or less an urban area, not where you normally hear the word famine associated, like in African countries?
Indeed, and not next door to ample food supply and to a very affluent country, which is Israel. The famine, which would mean massive loss of lives due to people dying from hunger, that is man-made from A to Z. There's no other way to describe this. It's not the Somali droughts that are killing people. It is the siege, the blocking of aid access to Gaza, and it's the bombardment that has made it impossible for Palestinians to produce their own food anymore.
That is Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Oslo, Norway. More than a half of humanity will be able to vote in elections in 2024. That's more than 4 billion people. 8 of the world's 10 most populous countries will go to the polls this year. In Africa, 19 countries are set for presidential or general elections. The media freedom group Reporters Without Borders has warned that the credibility of the polls will be threatened by sustained disinformation and misinformation campaigns. Darren Taylor reports.
In South Africa, there's audio on social media channels that sounds just like a senior opposition politician, Glynis Breytenbach.
Steenhuisen has taken millions and millions of rands worth of loan from the Bezos Foundation in America.
In the recording, Breytenbach apparently acknowledges that American billionaire Jeff Bezos has given her party, the Democratic Alliance, millions of dollars to defeat the governing African National Congress in coming elections.
I got literally hundreds of emails and WhatsApps asking me if it was in fact correct, which it clearly is not. It's the malicious use of false information, the malicious use of artificial intelligence, spreading a fake, dangerous message that really does influence people.
Breytenbach says the AI-generated audio is designed to present the DA as a slave to global white capitalism and thus an enemy of black South Africans. Helen Grange of Good Governance Africa, a pro-democracy group based in Johannesburg, says what happened to Breytenbach is happening across Africa and the world.
So this is a classic example of misinformation, i.e. manufactured fake news. The other side of the misinformation coin is disinformation, which fits the mold of propaganda.
Grange says Russia is particularly active and successful in undermining democracy in Africa using propaganda. Research by the Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. shows how Russia used videos that falsely depicted French soldiers saying they were on a mission to recolonize Africa. Russia has denied such allegations, saying they're what it calls Russophobia in Western countries. Grange says in 2023, France withdrew forces from the Sahel, opening a void in the battle against terrorism and creating the potential for Russia to undermine elections in the region later this year. Political analyst Mxolisi Zondo says it's particularly disturbing that senior African political figures are increasingly using disinformation to cast doubt over democratic processes. In this footage, former South African President Jacob Zuma suggests elections are un-African and questions why ballots are always counted in secret. He was speaking at a traditional ceremony in KwaZulu-Natal province. Zondo says Zuma's words are reminiscent of those uttered by many African politicians who feel threatened by democracy.
This is certainly a very scary case of propaganda and disinformation by a former president of the republic who has been elected twice under the same system that is about to elect the next National Assembly and subsequently the president of South Africa. To see a former president cast aspersions in that manner and plant a seed of doubts certainly shows that this is a political game which might end up in a very scary light.
Grange warns that democratic mechanisms for combating fake news are not ready, especially in Africa.
People are susceptible to misinformation and disinformation because as human beings we have a tendency to confirmation bias information that suits our narrative and discount information that doesn't. So for example, a person who's economically disempowered would be particularly susceptible to a fake news article that gives them hope, false as that may be.
The media freedom group Reporters Without Borders warns that at least half the elections in Africa this year will not be competitive, in large part because governments maintain strict control over information. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And now we have Samson Omali giving us a roundup of African sports from Abuja, Nigeria.
To begin the sport with the CAF Futsal Africa Cup, which got on the way on Thursday in Morocco. Zambia marked their return to the CAF Futsal Africa Cup with a commanding 5-2 victory over Ghana in the opening fixture of the 7th edition of the competition in Rabat. Host Atlas Lions of Morocco kicked off their Futsal AFCON 2024 campaign after the Zambia-Ghana match with a comprehensive 5-2 victory over Angola at the Prince Mole Abdullah Hall. The 5th edition of the Kipkino Classic World Continental Tour is set for a thrilling showdown between Olympics and World Athletics medalists at the Nyayo National Stadium in Kenya on the 20th of April. This year's edition has attracted Olympics 200-meter silver medalist Kenneth Banderek, who a fortnight ago defeated three-time world champion Christian Coleman, the 2016 Olympic javelin champion Thomas Roller, Olympics hammer throw champion Wojnik Nowicki, and the 2022 World Hammer Throw champion Pavel Vadidek will also grace the event. Race director Barnabas Correa described Kipkino Classic as one of the best organized meets on the continent and indeed the rest of the world.
Kipkino Classic started 5 years ago and it has been growing in pounds and leaps and pounds. It's one of the best organized meets in the world now as a continental tour code, which is the only one in Africa at the moment.
Staying with athletics, track and field athletes will be the first batch of Olympians to receive prize money for winning gold, ending a 128-year tradition. This comes after World Athletics announced a cash prize of $50,000 for every gold medal won in the track and field event. The reward will start at this year's Olympics in Paris. Additionally, there will be prize rewards for silver and bronze medalists in Los Angeles 2028. Paul Okelo, the organizing secretary of the Uganda Athletics Federation, believes this is great motivation for athletes as the federation has already qualified 15 athletes for the games.
Every athlete wants to be at the Olympics. So with the new, with the big announcement that came from World Athletics of rewarding the gold medal, it's $50,000. It's another boost.
In swimming news, South Africa's best swimmers are vying for places on Team South Africa for the Paris Olympics at the South Africa Swimming Championships, which began on Monday and is expected to be concluded on Saturday. It's a tougher task this time around since the IOC revised the qualifying standards. The committee is expecting to welcome 700 swimmers to Paris this year instead of the usual 1,000. Amy Carney, 100 meters freestyle champion for women, and Peter Kudzi, the 100 meters freestyle champion, both agreed that South African swimmers are embracing the new standards introduced to this year's Olympic Games by the IOC.
The whole world swimming faster, so we just have to swim faster, I guess.
I think it's good. I think the sport's growing around the world. People are becoming faster.
And that's it. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Bob Bass, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.